Welcome back to the Damage Report, everybody. I'm John Adirola. It's Friday. Brett Ehrlich's here.
Thank God, because otherwise I'm leaving.
Exactly. So you've got a show coming out today.
Yeah, we got the Happy Half Hour with guest Steve Bramucci from Up Rocks. He gets me drunk on all kinds of rum.
So many rums.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rum. And then we play a game called Real Question, Fake Question, which is a real question about rum followed by a fake question about rum.
And we also find out exactly how old you are, right?
Yes, and exactly how old I am. Also, we text our number neighbors. It's a really jam-packed show. And then for members, you also get the new hit from the guy who brought you Pen by Napo, Apple Pen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's called Everyone Must Die.
I had forgotten about that. I miss everything. But you won't miss everything because we've got a lot on this show. We're going to be talking about the state of the deficit and how Republicans are planning to fix the problem. That's going to be really exciting later on. Got an awesome congressional candidate joining us. This has been a big week for congressional candidates on the Damage Report. But later on the show, because this is Friday and because Brett's coming on, I wanted to keep things a little bit light. So we're going to have a little bit of fun with a few little games. One is, will Trump be able to speak for another week or so? We're gonna see the decline of his speaking ability. We're gonna play a game called Has He Ever Read the Bible?
I love that game.
Which is a fun video. And then, does Fox News know what drugs are? Because they talked about them and I listened, but I'm not sure. So we're gonna play some fun videos and we're also gonna follow up to a story about AOC from a few months ago, a little hit piece about her that turns out not to have been totally accurate. So that should be fun too. But we're gonna start off with the federal government, budget deficit and all of that. Thanks to some of the choices of Donald Trump and Senate and congressional Republicans, the budget's looking pretty bad. Deficit's really high, national debt is skyrocketing, and this is with the party of fiscal discipline, cares about deficits and all of that. And the scary thing really though is not the current state of the federal budget deficit, but it's the plan that's now starting to leak on how they're going to fix that problem, which is scarier than the problem itself. But before we get to that solution, let's talk about the scale of the problem. On Wednesday, the CBO said that the federal deficit will reach $960 billion for the 2019 fiscal year, which ends at the end of September, and breach the $1 trillion mark in 2020. Now that you should understand is happening against the backdrop of the longest economic expansion on record and the lowest jobless rate in 50 years. Both are things that are supposed to lower the deficit, not raise it. Especially when you have a party and a president who say, we need to get this down. We can't be those tax and spend liberals. We need to get control of this thing, but it is expanding. Not, you know, right after the recession, but after the recovery from the recession.
Yeah, I think there's a farce here.
What's the farce?
I think the farce is that Donald Trump will make this like a second term issue. Like he'll wait until after he's reelected to gut the social safety net. I just don't think that that makes any sense.
Why is that?
Because
spoiler alert, by the way, but why do you think so?
I was just reading the lower third, my bad.
that's true.
What they've done, then we'll bring it back to this first part, which is their premise that by reducing taxes, they'll grow the economy, and then eventually they will be able to bring in more money from the lower taxes to compensate for the deficit. What they have done at every turn and what they continue to hint that they will do in the future is to reduce other taxes. So they are reducing the means by which they will collect the taxes they say will magically appear so that they can compensate for the deficit. So they're never going to allow themselves to reduce the deficit. And that leads to my thing, which is it was disingenuous from in the first place to say they really cared about deficits. They just care about corporate interests, reducing taxes on them so that the rich can keep getting richer and not really incentivize any higher wages for employers.
I definitely agree that they were disingenuous about the deficit, and they have been for literally decades. They drive it up, and then eventually a Democrat gets into office. They, you know, spend the whole 4 or 8 years trying to get it down, and then it gets jacked up again once a Republican gets in. Really fast, I don't want to have a big debate about it, but I am curious. In sum, you just said they say we're going to lower taxes, but that jacks up the economy so that we actually make more off of taxes than we would have if the taxes were higher. Do they actually believe that?
No.
They say that,
but what has borne out after they got their tax cut in every possible way is they don't really care about literally anything other than profits.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that makes sense.
Okay, I agree.
It makes sense that's what they want. That's what capitalism is. There's nothing necessarily in capitalism that directly says you need to have like this larger responsibility for for anyone else. It's more of like a short-term goal that they've prioritized over long-term responsibility, which the Democrats actually show up and provide.
Yeah, and those arguments, the arguments that you heard, you know, before the Bush tax cuts, before the Trump tax cuts, it's always that, oh, sure, initially doesn't look that great, but long-term trickles down, or whatever analogy they want to use. And what I always stress is, take a look at what the bill necessarily does immediately and what they say someday it'll do. And if it always benefits the rich immediately and necessarily and hypothetically benefits the poor, if you start to notice that pattern, maybe learn something from that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the plan, because you believe it's a farce, but I think that there might be something to it, so we're gonna talk about it. Conservative groups, which largely supported the tax cuts, have pushed Congress to cut future deficits by reducing benefits for federal healthcare and retirement programs like Medicare and Social Security. FreedomWorks says something must be done soon, and that means taking a hard look at mandatory spending, the root cause of the United States' fiscal woes. We will disagree about the root cause of those woes, because we know that the tax plan, which was supposed to in fact raise how much revenue the government gets, because it's gonna make the economy so awesome. Well, tax revenues for 2018 and 2019 fell more than $430 billion short of what the budget office predicted they would be in June 2017 before the tax law was approved that December. So you would think that the next time they try to cut taxes, that would be a relevant fact that you'd want to bear in mind. But we know that that's not going to happen, because we don't learn anything from these different cycles. And so what has been learned, president has apparently learned the exact opposite lesson. He's, and this is in the words of the New York Times, has mused in recent days about reducing taxes on investors paying capital gains, a move that's estimated to add another $100 billion to deficits over the next decade. He's also talked about cutting payroll taxes, which could reduce revenues by $75 billion a year, which is more than Bernie Sanders' free public college plan a year, by the way. Just this extra change of taxes, if we didn't do it, we could thereby pay for public college for everybody. And by the way, and again, you never know with Trump, because he says he's gonna do things, then he forgets about it, and then he gets on Greenland or whatever. But he said recently that he has the authority to reduce capital gains taxes unilaterally by himself, no Congress needed, he can just cut those taxes.
No, he can't. That is literally—
hashtag drain the swamp, hashtag man of the people.
Hashtag reason for Congress, hashtag power of the purse.
Yeah, but he says it, I mean, who knows? He also says he can end birthright citizenship, which we'll get back to later in the show. So, but you think the idea, and by the way, why don't we cut ahead? Why don't we cut ahead to the, I guess the point is, Senator John Barrasso, who's talked with Trump, says that he's talked about this being a second term project, cutting Medicare, possibly Social Security, to help drive down deficits.
I have no doubt that the fiscal, there are people who genuinely believe that after reading Ayn Rand, it opened their eyes to this concept that we don't need a social safety net. The social safety net's deep within the heart of the individual, right? They believe that, and they're talking to Trump about that. I just don't see any incentive for Trump to actually follow through on cutting those things, because especially if it's a second term project, because let's look at what that second term would be like. He wins the presidency, he's not gonna win the Congress, he's not gonna win control back of Congress, he'll have every—
I mean, you never know.
So we never know, but he's
probably not.
He's probably not gonna win Congress back, he's not gonna, the Republicans aren't gonna get 60 seats in Congress to overcome any potential obstructionism by the Democrats, right?
Which we would hope would come if he tried to cut Medicare, but we can't necessarily say would.
Which we can't necessarily say would, but I don't think the Democrats would be like, yeah, go ahead and cut Medicare and Social Security. So any downturn in the economy that might result, he can still blame on Democratic obstructionism. He isn't gonna go actually, like as much as he says it, that's the Social Security is still the third rail of politics. And the people who receive Social Security are older, and those older people are like Trump fans. And that is one thing that he doesn't need to meddle with, that he can avoid and still claim this moral victory that, listen, it's the Democrats that are keeping all this stuff from happening. They're keeping all of my initiatives from going. Also, Jerome Powell, who I might burn at the stake tomorrow, hasn't done the right thing with interest rates. All of this,
yeah.
So that's my take on it.
Yeah, you might be right. You know, you made me think about something in terms of, like they always say in the second term, like they're worried about their legacy, what's gonna happen, everything. Obviously, Obama was worried about a variety of different things. You know, one thing I was thinking of, let's say Trump does get reelected, he gets a second term. 2 years in, we start having speculation about who's going to be running on both sides to replace him. Generally, it's in the president's interest to make sure that his party retains control. I don't think that Trump would care.
He doesn't care at all.
Like, is he going to spend the last year and a half of his second term, if he gets one, working to make sure that Marco Rubio takes his place? He doesn't care at all about that. Like, making it about another person, like, God help us if we ever have to see if this is true or not. But I think the Republicans are going to be shocked at how much he works to undercut their chances of winning after him.
Yeah, well, that's probably going to happen. That would probably happen anyway, that it would just switch hands regardless, just looking at the last two-term presidents.
Yeah.
But also, like, you see people like Paul Ryan moving back to D.C.
Yeah.
You see a lot of folks that came in, got their tax cut, proven my point earlier. They're like, I got it, I'm out. Mm. They leave, and now they're just like, all right, Paul Ryan's not buying in D.C. He's renting in D.C., just kind of seeing what the waters are like. And then
but probably to work
folks,
as a lobbyist for a few years.
Probably to work as a lobbyist for a few years, but just those folks that held their note, the ones that got out after the tax cut because they already got their win and the rest is just weird small ball. Mm-hmm. They're just waiting for their chance to come back and seeing what's happening. And then on the left, you see, you know, 2024 presidential candidate Gavin Newsom just needling the president.
Can't wait to have that conversation a bunch in the future. Super fast, just one last point to have a little bit of fun. Trump was losing it about the Fed and China and all that on Twitter, and there's just one thing I noticed that I have to read. So this is a section of a long rant. He says, the vast amounts of money made and stolen by China from the United States year after year for decades will and must stop. Our great American companies are hereby ordered to immediately start looking for an alternative to China, including bringing your companies home and making your products in the USA. And it's just for a guy who has such a tenuous grasp of the English language and reality, like it's this like magical power of words that he thinks that saying hereby ordered means something. Like it made me think of like Michael Scott coming out and yelling, I declare bankruptcy. Like that's doesn't mean anything. You're here by order. Oh, okay, well I'm gonna move my factories back then. That's not how anything works.
It reminds me of Network, the movie Network, where Ned Beatty is at the end of a very long table being like, you must stop being the way you are for corporate interests dominate news.
It's hereby ordered. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, candidate's gonna be joining us after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Here at the Damage Report, we are fans of bold primary challenges, and it doesn't get much bolder these days than challenging Steny Hoyer in Maryland's 5th Congressional District, but that is exactly what our next guest is doing. So meet the progressive challenger to Steny Hoyer, Michaela Wilkes. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm glad to have you here, and I want to learn a lot more about your platform, your background, and all of that. So catch us. I mean, one of the things I've been asking a lot of our guests recently, and I'm really always interested in, is how does a person go from living their normal life to wanting to run for elected office? So tell me about that process for you.
Well, wanting to run for elected office for me pretty much goes off of my life experiences and the people in my community, because there's so many people in our communities who feel left out in the conversations being had in Congress. You know, we feel like we're not properly represented. And I pretty much am running because we need someone who's going to look out for our interests rather than corporate interests, which is what I've been witnessing throughout my life being a District 5 resident.
Okay, so tell me about some of your experiences, some of the areas that you've worked in that could help to inform how you would function as an elected representative.
Yeah, so aside from having academic knowledge about legislation and how current legislation affects people in my community, you know, I know firsthand how our political system and how our criminal system and how criminal justice system and how social institutions marginalize people based on race and gender and people who are impoverished or just, you know, lack of knowledge about the system. You know, I've been a victim of the criminal justice system. From being incarcerated via traffic violations. You know, I've been denied health care when I needed it the most. And just having those firsthand experiences, we need that in Congress, in my opinion, because we need people who are affected by these situations and who have firsthand experience with it to come in and fix the situation, because we know what it's like. Like, we're the closest to the pain, and we should be the ones to be on the forefront of legislation decisions.
So you mentioned the criminal justice system there. So let's start talking about your platform. In that particular area, what are some of the changes you'd like to see implemented?
Well, for one, I would like to end cash bail. I would also like to end the predatory phone rates for prisoners, which I think is just crazy. I remember one time, and specifically, there was this one young woman, and all she had to pay was $150, which is a lot for some people, you know, and she could not afford that to get out of prison. And she couldn't call any loved ones or anyone to come bail her out because you have to pay. And this is in a complex that profits off of our struggles. And I think that's something that we have to end in the criminal justice system. We have to stop criminalizing poverty. We have to stop criminalizing just life happening to us. We have to stop criminalizing drug addiction. We have to stop criminalizing mental illness. And we must stop criminalizing our children. Because as a juvenile, I was in the criminal justice system and put in juvenile detention for things such as skipping school and running away from home, for issues that I was going through and rebelling out as a teen because of a death, because of a loss of a family member. And instead of someone offering me rehabilitation or someone to speak to, I was automatically put in juvenile detention. And we need a criminal justice system that is going to work to rehabilitate people versus exploit them.
So let's talk about the challenge ahead of you. Just last year, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez took down what was at the time the fourth most powerful Democrat in the House. You're aiming even higher than that. Steny Hoyer is very high up in Democratic leadership. And so what is it about his time in office that made it so that you felt like you needed to replace him?
I feel like he's very stagnant on a lot of issues that he shouldn't be. I don't feel like he uses his role to the fullest capability, to the fullest capacity. You know, we need a lawyer who, not a lawyer, we need a representative who's going to be on the forefront of these issues. I live in Maryland. We need to be on the front of climate change. We need a representative who's going to enact the Green New Deal. We need a representative who's going to support Medicare for all. We need a representative who's going to help us out with our affordable housing crisis. What we don't need is a representative is who's going to take money from the corporations that contribute to our struggles and then profit off of them. I mean, that's clearly evidence right there where he's beholden, and he's beholden to his corporate donors rather than his constituents. And that's an issue for me.
It's an issue for me as well, so I certainly share that with you. But it's also an issue that we can find in other Democratic leadership these days, including Nancy Pelosi as well, who in the past you've said you would not necessarily support were you to be elected. Could you elaborate on that for us?
Yeah, I believe Nancy Pelosi, she takes a lot of corporate money as well. I don't agree with, you know, you see her on Twitter saying how bad Donald Trump is and we need to do something when you're literally in the position to do something about it and you choose not to. This is a president who is racist. This is a president who is trying to take us back. He's trying to strip rights away from immigrants. He's trying to strip rights away from women. And for her to be in the position to do something about it and constantly be on Twitter and say, oh, well, we need to do something about this. This is an issue. We'll do something about it. You have the power to, and you choose not to. And I would just absolutely not support her at all. I mean, I just can't.
So I want to ask you a question I've asked a number of different candidates recently. Looking out there, you know, you're in your primary challenge right now. Imagine you were not. You've already beaten Steny Hoyer. You're out there. Considering what's going on in the country this week, what would you like to think you would be working on if you were in the position already?
If I were in the position already, I would definitely be working on Medicare for All, and then considering things that have been happening this week, I would definitely be working on immigration reform. You know, the Trump administration is trying to hold migrant families in custody indefinitely.
Yeah.
And currently, Congress is in a recess. I think that this is the perfect reason to call Congress back to the floor, because this is a crisis. I mean, you are stripping rights away from people and trying to indefinitely detain families, children. This is something that just simply cannot happen. We need to do something about it now. And so considering the things that have been going on this week, that is something that I would definitely be tackling, is immigration reform and creating policy and legislation that will stop things like this from happening, that will prevent it and also mitigate it and protect us against Donald Trump's administration.
Where can people find out more about your platform, your candidacy?
People can find out about my platform and my candidacy on my website, which is www.michaela2020.com. And all of my social media handles are @MeetMichaela.
Well, Michaela, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was nice talking to you.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, going to lighten it up just a little bit, close out the week with a look at our president's mental state and ability to communicate his ideas or anything at all after this. If you're like me, you've probably had an issue with any number of different things that Donald Trump has said over the past few years. Well, I've got some good news for you. He's having trouble speaking basically at all lately. I'll show you.
She shouldn't treat the United States that way by saying, what an absurd. She said, absurd. That's not the right word to use. Absurd.
The members of our armed forces, and you understand that very well, the members of our armed forces have always lived.
Also calling upon all 50 states to immediately waive all applicable state taxes as well. Despite these obstacles, Karen.
The members of our armed forces, and you understand that very well, the members of our armed forces have always lived by the word of Douglas MacArthur.
I don't understand that very well. So that by the way, is from his chopper talk. And then later that day, he gave a speech before a veterans group. That's one day.
I do want to say something about chopper talk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to talk about chopper talk.
Frequently in chopper talk, you can see the chopper as this loud cacophony of is going. The rotors aren't moving.
Yeah, I've wondered about that too.
It's not that the rotors are moving. I think they just turn it on
to make noise.
Everyone crazy. The same way that that like Washington D.C. and the White House are designed to be this massive home court advantage to intimidate people that come to visit.
Yeah.
He just has this thing behind him. Mm-hmm. It's like someone whose office has a giant gun on the desk. Just like, hey. It's
probably his office.
You know, I'm trying to intimidate you.
I have a different theory. And we're gonna talk more about Chopper Talk and what he said. I think the thing is, he's walking from a building to a chopper.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees media, so he stops. And he stops for 45 minutes sometimes to talk to the media. But the thing is, the people in the chopper wanna go. They have somewhere to go. And so
no,
I think they make noise. No, it's like I used to work as a waiter, and when tables would stay too late, we take out the vacuum and we start vacuuming to make it an uncomfortable place to just hang out. I'm pretty sure that's what
it is. That's exactly what it's like. You're right.
Thank you for agreeing with
me. You're right that the
and not
people,
just trying to move on.
No, their job is just to be there. They're
they got
to
go.
They don't have to go. That's the
You don't
president.
Think they're getting calls from aides their like, job, hey, he's late for Denmark or
do
whatever?
Do you think like the limo driver for Mr. Big in Sex and the City, it's the only limo driver
why
I can think of, is like, let's go. No, he's being paid mm-hmm. to go when they want to go. Mm-hmm. I think the frustrating part is the like, hey, we only have so much gas in Marine One. I should probably shut it off till we're actually ready mm-hmm. to go.
Okay, so here's what I want to happen. Someone who watches the show and is a qualified helicopter pilot.
And has seen every episode of Sex and the City.
Okay, only if you've watched Sex and the City, you're knocking my paper soap. Okay, this is going off the rails. So anyway, the actual speaking issues,
yeah.
Do we agree that that's denture trubs?
No. I think it's probably denture. I don't think it's just denture trubs. I think if you hear him speak off the cuff, he gets about 2/3 of the way through a sentence and decides whether he's going to continue with it or not or
but
kick out.
But he tried to say armed force multiple times. He couldn't say forces multiple times.
I think it's denture trubs. I don't think it's mental trubs. I think mm-hmm. it's also someone who's just not good at reading, but that doesn't make you an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're fantastic at it. You've kind of bragged to me about how good you are at it
before.
Yeah,
all the time.
You're like, I think I'm just really good at reading quotes out loud.
So that's true.
That's true.
And it's the only thing about myself I've ever bragged about.
No, John is not a bragger. Usually John is very self-deprecating.
It's the weirdest.
But like you are right. Yeah. It's good. You have the inflection to cold read something. Mm-hmm. That's not one of his skills.
Of
but
all
I don't
the
think
weird
I should
flexes,
call him an idiot for it.
It's the weirdest flex.
It is a very weird flex.
Anyway, hold on. So
very
on
like
the,
I was good at school flex. Like I was good at seventh grade
I
flex.
Loved homework. Anyway, I want to show you just a little bit more. And this is, again, this is the mental versus denture. Okay, a little bit more evidence from a few months back.
I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the investigation, the beginnings of that investigation about the Mueller report. The Mueller report, I wish, covered the oranges, how it started, the beginnings of the investigation, how it started.
That can't be denture trubs. And he, by
you're
the
right,
way,
you're right. I he, forgot about
he's
that.
He's together enough that he knows he's making a mistake because that's why he said the beginnings.
That's senility. That's like a version of senility, a very specific version of it, where you're just and you watch people who struggle with it. They get very frustrated because they know what they're trying to say. They just can't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a real problem. Unfortunately, he's giving us a lot of real problems
yeah.
along the way, and it doesn't make you feel any more secure as a human being
no.
watching the person who claims to have it together and very obviously doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my grandfather had a lot of problems, and he would ask the same question over and over, and so we felt bad for him. But he wasn't president, you know? So
thank
a slightly
God.
Different situation.
Thank God.
So look, we've had a little bit of fun, but I do want to talk about Chopper Talk because it is consequential. We don't have presidential briefings anymore. All we have is Chopper Talk, which is not the same thing. And to give an idea of what these little impromptu sessions, what form they can take, I believe it was yesterday's Chopper Talk, maybe 2 days ago, but yesterday, I think, he in the span of one Chopper Talk, he called the Danish prime minister nasty for not selling him Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
He referred to himself as the chosen one while literally looking at the heavens. He said he could unilaterally end birthright citizenship, mm-hmm. which isn't true. He talked about serving more than 14 years as president, and he threatened to send thousands of captured ISIS fighters into Europe if they don't do what he wants. In one Chopper Talk, and the thing is, like those press briefings, a lot of people feel like were kind of pointless anyway, that they were never going to get any accurate information. It was just a venue for Sarah Huckabee Sanders to lie to them. You have a history of covering those press briefings in a slightly different way. What do you think about their replacement with Chopper Talk?
I think that if you are a reporter, you like this way better.
Why is that?
Because before you were just kind of having an auxiliary conversation with a secondary source who was supposedly better at certain things like messaging for a president who is just more of a hip fire type of guy.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's
but
Sarah Huckabee Sanders
but direct
or
access, direct access is always better than having an intermediary, mm-hmm. an oranges intermediary.
So some of the concerns I've seen raised, including by reporters in this little gaggle, this chopper gaggle, is that follow-up questions are effectively non-existent. Like he can pretend that he can't hear you because of the chopper. So he just, like, if he doesn't like what you're saying, he just moves on and points another person.
Well, the ideal thing is the president goes occasionally before the press in the press briefing room and answers questions the way that the rules have always applied, continue to apply. But that's not happening. So mm-hmm. both of it's like this terrible false choice between two horrible evils.
Yeah. So you said that they probably would prefer this, but
I mean,
so
I think
a slightly
no
different
one
question.
Would prefer the loud noise.
Yeah, I don't think it's that loud, actually. It's like I have tinnitus. Yeah. So who does this help, though? Does this help Trump that he has this form of like very strong control over who he asks questions of, how long he talks about it? He literally, by the way, when he's done with chopper talk, he just walks off.
There was
like in the middle of an answer, he'll walk off.
This deus ex machina.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. He just
You can hear the machina.
Yeah, that literally, he called himself God and left in a machina. Like, that's what happens every day. Of course it plays into this. And of course this is what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
The press is always in this weird situation where they have to like respond to what's available.
Yeah.
For Trump, it's great because he gets himself in clips on every show, including this one.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to determine at least what the responses are, if not the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And he changes questions into other subjects and gives those answers based on what he wants to do.
Although, to be fair, Sarah Huckabee Sanders does a lot of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't have an answer, but I think that we should try to come up with one before the next president, regardless of whether or not it's a Dem or Republican. The press briefings were terrible for a lot of different reasons. I think chopper talk, just because he prefers it, it warns me that it's worse. I think that we need something better. I wish that there was something like Question Time in the UK. Like, he should go before the actual representatives. I mean, that could be a mess too. It often is in the UK, but it. At least it's less. I don't want the president to be determining exactly how this goes, because he's going to do it to his own benefit, not to our benefit.
Because he's a wrong, dishonorable non-gentleman.
Is that a reference?
That's a reference to the House of Commons Question Time with the Prime Minister. They have to call him the right honorable gentleman. Is a moron. That's how you.
Okay.
Goes.
Okay. Sex and City goes to the UK. Okay, thank you everybody. We're gonna take a short break. We come back. Let's see. Oh, follow up on a story. Anonymous group tried to destroy AOC with a poll. Turns out they didn't know what they were talking about. Remember not too long ago, this poll that implied that people like AOC, Ilhan Omar, would be damaging to the Democrats in battleground districts. You might have seen an article like this. Anonymous, this is Axios, by the way, I think, who initially put it out. This leaked poll shows that swing voters deeply dislike AOC and the left wing, widening the party's rift. And so be really scared about them. Them being the face of the party, is that a good thing? Maybe a bad thing? But the thing about that poll was that we had no information about who they actually talked to. Turned out it was basically Trump voters that they talked to. And so they designed a poll to make her look bad. And now that we have some more information where we can actually look at the methods in battleground districts, we have a much better idea about who is popular and who is not. And so initially, let's jump ahead of this quote. Let's show you the new information from Data for Progress. We bring up this chart. You're gonna see it's a lot to take in, especially if you're on a phone. So don't worry so much about the bars. Just look at the net favorability on the right. Now, this is combining in battleground districts, people on the left, people on the right, and the center. And so everybody is gonna fare pretty poorly because the other side is probably gonna despise them. But if you look at that there, AOC is at a -6 net favorability, including Republicans and Democrats, which might sound bad. But if you look at other politicians, national politicians like Mitch McConnell or Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, they're doing far worse. Mitch McConnell's at a net -29, which means that both Democrats and Republicans aren't fans of him.
Yeah, this was something that was put out by people to paint actual progressives in a negative light.
Mm-hmm.
They explicitly went around, they had their conclusion they wanted to draw, and they looked around to find out how they could draw it, how they could make something that looks like a chart, that looks like a quote, and just put it in a bunch of articles and put it out to folks. And that's exactly what happened. And it's very frustrating. My point is, like, who are the 5% of Democrats who see Mitch McConnell very favorably? Or is that just people at all? Are these all Democrats? Like, this is what's so frustrating about
it. That would be
of people in organizations in battleground districts.
Yeah.
So in battleground districts, 5% of people find Mitch McConnell to be viewed in a very favorable light.
I think that's overall. He's very unpopular, even amongst Republicans.
He's stupid.
Yeah.
The Republican Party, very unfavorable. The red is also very much bolder.
It's very dark, which sounds good for a Republican, but not in this case.
But that's
so there are some other lessons to be learned here. First of all, if we could bring that up just briefly, Considering what happened yesterday with the DNC voting down a climate-focused debate, just take note that the most favorable person or organization are clean energy companies. It turns out fossil fuel companies, not very favorable. The gap in favorability overall net between clean energy and fossil fuel is 77 points. So maybe try to get them on your side.
But that's what's very frustrating to me, is the term moderate now no longer applies to your positions. It just applies to how much you want to fight for stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, the moderate position is to favor clean energy companies. The moderate position is to have a favorable view of climate activists.
Yeah.
And you see people like AOC, Ayanna Pressley, Justice Democrats, they are climate activists. It's just along the way. That's why I think all of this is way too complicated. All of this is just another attempt to solidify control in one way or another. And we should just let people know what progressive positions are.
Well, we're trying to do that here.
Yeah.
We certainly are trying. Look, I've said for a long time, this is one of, I have a lot of positions that absolutely nobody likes. And one of them has been for a long time, I've said, and this is based on my time in political science research, moderates don't exist, independents don't really exist. It's not a thing. Like, you could identify as that, but it doesn't mean what people say it means. People have value systems, they just do, and things do cluster in particular ways. Now, you can have more or less political knowledge, more or less political sophistication, more or less apathy or passion for politics, but you don't just randomly choose policies from across the political spectrum, or at least very, very few people do. And anyway, that's a larger conversation.
Yeah, but and then just specifically, yeah, I agree. Moderate is a label that people can do whatever they want. It's just a label you can stick on stuff. And what's frustrating from the Young Turks perspective working here is looking at all of our positions that we espouse and seeing that they are widely supported by the giant swath of Americans, which would make our views essentially, in a certain way, moderate. But we don't enjoy like all of the amazing things that those news outlets that are perceived to be moderate do enjoy, like CNN, MSNBC, and even Fox. They're like the mainstream moderate news in people's mind, because mainstream and moderate seem to be interchangeable in a lot of ways, even though that's frequently fallacy.
They're not fringe or extreme.
But they just have a lot of money coming in.
Yeah.
And from a bunch of people who are like, well, they seem safe here.
Yeah, because, and I would say arguably because what moderate tends to mean is pro-corporate.
Even though, even though our views are more in line with the country.
Yeah, they are extremely popular, except that always gets cut off somehow. Yeah. So really fast, a couple more lessons to take from this. On net, among voters in battleground districts, Ocasio-Cortez polls at least as well as other major Democratic figures. Although all political figures had negative net favorability, this is America after all, Ocasio-Cortez is viewed roughly as favorable on net as Joe Biden, and more favorably on net than President Donald Trump and Democratic leadership. So just, you know, if you're a MAGA head, I know that you hate her and you think that she's the worst, but she's far more popular than your president.
And psychologically, there are certain generic concepts that are easy to favor and certain generic concepts that are easy to hate. The idea of making the world a better place sounds more like clean energy. That's easy to favor.
Yeah.
Congress is a generic concept that's easy to hate. And in the middle, as you get more specific, there's other variations. Like AOC, I don't know that much about her, but she seems to be for the making the world a better place thing. So it's easier to like her. And then that's when the right comes in and tries to give you more reasons as you get more knowledge of her to hate her. And that's where then she could be lumped in with concepts like Congress if they get their way.
Yeah, or whatever extreme positions they pretend that she has. But additionally, each member of the squad, this is AOC, Ayanna Pressley, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib, had a higher net favorability than Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, and the Republican Party in battleground districts. So Tucker and Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity, like, I know that you've tried really hard for months and months, especially to make people hate Ilhan Omar. Turns out it's not really working, unfortunately, for them. And by the way, good news for Elizabeth Warren. She has the highest favorable rating of any Democrat in battleground districts, especially among independents. Although people like her, Bernie Sanders, tend to be more popular than some of like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, things like that. So anyway, just a little bit of information for you. We're gonna take one more break. We come back. Fox News wants you to learn about drugs, but they should perhaps learn about drugs first. Evangelicals love Donald Trump. They consider him the chosen one, and he considers himself that as well. The way I know is he recently called himself the chosen one and also referred to a friend of his who said that he was like the king of Israel. But my question now is, has he even read the Bible? Here's our evidence.
You mentioned the Bible. You've been talking about how it's your favorite book. And you said, I think last night in Iowa, some people are surprised that you say that. I'm wondering what one or two of your most favored Bible verses are.
Well,
and why.
I wouldn't want to get into it because to me that's very personal. You know, when I talk about the Bible, it's very personal. So I don't want to get into
verse that means a lot to you that you think about or cite.
The Bible means a lot to me, but I don't want to get into specifics.
Even to cite a verse that you like.
No, I don't want to do that.
You're an Old Testament guy or a New Testament guy?
Probably equal. I think it's just an incredible, the whole Bible is an incredible. I joke very much so. They always hold up the Art of the Deal. I say my second favorite book of all time. But I just think the Bible is just something very special.
Trump fans, come on. You watch that. You think that he's read even a verse of the Bible.
Yeah, it's very clear when he says equal. I like them both. I like the new one. You gotta have a new. You gotta have the new one, but you gotta know.
Yeah,
the old
like
one.
Old conservatives like old.
Okay, it's like so, George Costanza trending. Like he has no idea what this job is.
Like Flavin.
Yeah,
who's your favorite? No, it's like David Brent when his favorite musician is Beethoven, and they're like, "What Beethoven do you like?" And he's like, "Oh, all the hits, the big ones."
I'll go another Office reference. It's when name another Smokey Robinson song from The Smoke Man.
Yeah,
I love The Smoke Man. That's it.
It's one thing to be like name a verse. Okay, first of all, if you're the chosen one, you know you're the Lamb of God. You should be able to come up with something. But okay, that's hard because you have to come up with a specific thing. But when they say, "Do you like the new or old?" Just choose one and go with it.
Dude, you can't even picture Trump reading a magazine, let alone the Bible.
He doesn't even proofread his tweets. That's 140 characters.
I didn't write it, don't care.
Yeah.
But if he thinks he's God, then we convince him that those are his words. Maybe we can get him to read it.
Exactly.
And but so,
I
was just gonna say that's not their act. So this is stuff. It's like you wanna hold these people and show them as hypocrites, right? Mm-hmm. You guys are hypocrites. And you're disingenuous what you're saying.
I would like that.
Right, and you want them to say, "You're right." But they're not gonna.
No, I think that by the close of this video,
dude, that was Mark
they will
Halperin
be typing emails
to put that.
You're right, John.
And it goes. I think you said it. Like this is an old video that came to light, and the reason.
Well, no, I mean it was a thing back in the day, but especially
back in the day when Mark Halperin still had a television show.
Exactly, he's not back on the
when
dope
Mr. Halperin did.
Yeah,
you know.
So, but no, it's the chosen one, the king of Israel. All of the like him implying that he has got God's divine essence infused
dude,
in
dude, they think you kill babies, so
that's that a good point. I haven't.
It's really all it comes down to. I hate to tell you,
but look, for evangelicals, I get that they'll still think plausible deniability. Maybe next to his bed, next to the book of Hitler speeches, he's got a Bible. Technically, okay. Well, if I can't convince you with his lack of knowledge of what's actually the text in the Bible, perhaps I can convince you with the text of Trump. So, let's compare the actual chosen one with Trump on a few issues. So let's turn to Jesus on enemies. Jesus said, "Love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you." Trump has said, "When people wrong you, go after those people because it's a good feeling because other people see you doing it. I always get even."
What's an eye for an eye?
That is like something a henchman in Spider-Man would say.
So the truth
Not
is he just
Jesus.
He just likes the Old Testament.
He does seem to like the run with it. Okay, there's a lot of people who like the Old Testament. Not necessarily, I mean, the evangelicals tend to like the new one, you know, because the whole Jesus thing. So let's turn now to Jesus on humility. Jesus, "Those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." To which Trump adds, "Sorry, losers and haters, but my IQ is one of the highest, and you all know it. Please don't feel so stupid or insecure. It's not your fault." Hey, it's not your fault. That's nice.
He won't be humbled.
No.
It just seems like Jesus is wrong with these quotes.
So wait, you come out of these comparisons thinking Jesus was naive?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I think you're wrong.
I forgive you because Jesus says unforgiveness. No, what are you gonna say?
Yeah, well, I went to Catholic school. I know all the teachings of Jesus. Mm-hmm. I took tests on them, mm-hmm. and they're all like, be nice to people. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And I don't like people who are using God's house in a terrible way. Mm-hmm. My temple should be a house of prayer. But you've made it a den of thieves. Mm-hmm. Get out. That's what I remember from Jesus Christ Superstar, the musical. But
that's what you studied.
But like, that was
you were in it. I remember
the Cliff's Notes with mm-hmm. mnemonic devices of music. But the truth is here, like all of this stuff, the evangelicals out there, they are just trying to be holier than thou, mm-hmm. and they. Built into it is this weird hypocrisy of forgiveness that is a get out of jail free card, and the you don't know his heart, you don't know anyone else's heart, and it is this everyone loves to live in a little bubble that makes them happy, mm-hmm. and they don't want you to make it complicated on mm-hmm. them. They just know that the right is the evangelical side, and I'm with them, and my individual representatives represent that, mm-hmm. and Trump is fine. I've picked my battle, and my battle is abortion, and you're a baby killer. Mm-hmm. And every time you point
We've
out what Trump
that.
Said that was kind of a bully kind of thing to say, mm-hmm. that's small ball compared to all the mutilated baby corpses.
You're saying that he does some bad things, but they can forgive him.
But that's what that's I don't agree with them by any means, but mm-hmm. that's what it comes down to. It's just hilarious to me that Trump does not know anything about the Bible, mm-hmm. and this is what he thinks is an awesome answer. It is very clear he doesn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm. So he's being forgiven, even though he doesn't understand the biblical like idea of forgiveness.
Yeah.
So we'll turn now to that. Jesus on forgiveness. Jesus says, I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance, to which Trump adds, why do I have to repent? Why do I have to ask for forgiveness if I'm not making mistakes? That's evangelical, right? I didn't do anything wrong. What's the problem? I'm just gonna read one more just because it's fun.
Please do.
So Jesus on wealth. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. To which Trump adds, part of the beauty of me is that I'm very rich. Okay, I know nobody's gonna care because nothing matters and nothing ever changes. I just thought we should correct the record just a little bit, even though it doesn't matter.
True, Trump does not Bible well.
Exactly, yeah, new world. Okay, thank you for watching. We'll be back on the other side. Fox News had a guest on and brought up the drug problem, but I'm not really sure he knows what drugs are. Let's watch.
California has tried to clear out their prisons, and yet every year they continue to have overcrowded prisons. And the focus ought to be on a society that follows the law, not allowing people to defecate in the streets, not allowing individuals to lay on the street, having just shot up with marijuana and having
heroin
and having a needle sticking out of them. We ought to be focused on solving crimes.
Are we being too hard? Is that a slip of the tongue, or does he think that you shoot up a marijuana
I think
to get high?
It makes me feel better today if I believe that guy really thinks you shoot up with marijuana.
Okay, so but what do you really think?
I think it was a mistake. Because
really?
He paused as they paused and they were like, and everyone was like, that didn't sound right.
I wonder if there was like four people with him, if at least one of them was like, I think that's wrong, but I'm not sure enough to bring it up.
But later on, fun ways to shoot up with marijuana
exactly.
here on Fox and Friends, home of victims and recipes.
Yeah, so, and here's the thing. It might be that they speak loose and you know they're on the air or whatever, but Andrew Lawrence tweeted this and it was some of the B-roll that they used. So let's take a look at this tweet. And he points out doing a marijuana by putting it in a spoon and then melting it down. I mean, they seem to want to talk about heroin and other harder drugs. And the thing is, like, it's one thing for the guest to potentially have a slip of the tongue. I get that, or whatever. But they do generally talk about marijuana as if it's still the 40s or the 50s. Like, they don't get that It's legal here in California. It's been legal now for years. Everybody smokes and it doesn't matter. Nothing bad has happened.
Well, the priority they have has nothing to do with marijuana. It did, and then marijuana got legalized and nothing terrible happened, right?
They still talk about it as a gateway drug that's going to end up with you hooked on God knows what.
But their priority is to make cities seem terrible so that they can get, so they can continue this, like, wouldn't it be great strategy if they can get people in cities to vote Republican. That's the strategy. That's what they're doing. That's what they're repeating. And no one's going to stop them. Like, there's a lot of little tiny bubbles of news on the internet, and those bubbles aren't very big. But there's also a giant bubble of people on Fox News, and I listen to it when I'm driving home at night sometimes.
You too.
Yeah. And I turn the channel right as I say out loud, I want to drive off this road. And it really is just repeating nonsense like that.
You want a little bit more nonsense?
Every day.
So in 2017, a guest claimed food stamp recipients were using their government benefits to buy weed and cocaine.
Those things are the same.
My Coke dealer lets me swipe my EBT card.
I love that. I mean, that's a great business model if you can accept the EBT. Yeah, there are a lot of people that go on shows all the time that know nothing about anything, and their job is to talk. Do you know how it works?
I'm trying to get in on that, but they won't let me on.
Do you know how it works? Like, I used
really
to do hits on HLN. They say, come over here, we'll send you the topics that you're an expert on, and you're on your way there, and you get an email. Once you get to the lobby, you find out what you're talking about, and you're the expert on it in 25 seconds.
Are you implying that you were not actually the expert on it?
I am the expert on everything I'm saying right now.
Okay, well,
you just had a firsthand source about how to be on HLN with AJ Hammer.
I was once on HLN and it was kind of like that.
It's just like that.
So look, here's the thing. I do want to become an expert. I'm not one. And so I did some research. And did you know that shooting up a marijuana did happen once? The last case documented by an English language medical journal was recorded by the Western Journal of Medicine back in 1983. The patient made a boiled marijuana broth, strained it through cotton, and injected the liquid into the vein in his inner elbow. He claimed to have tried it once before and experienced pleasant psychological effects only, but then began experiencing a cough, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, back pain, and a fever. He was discharged 5 days later.
That's amazing.
Don't do that.
Good for him.
It's so easy to consume. It's the easiest thing in the world. Salads are harder to consume than marijuana.
Oh my God.
You don't need to strain it through cloth.
Especially
and inject a broth in your arm.
The little blueberries covered in chocolate. My God, man. I will say
this. That's why I often see you passed out with blueberries on you.
There's way worse stuff that the original guy said in that video than shooting up with marijuana. It is the vilification of people who have actual problems. And it is folks like him working at Fox that has advertisements from major pharmaceutical companies telling you how to get hooked on the very things that end up making you addicted and ruining your life.
Yeah, and could very well kill you as they kill many people. And marijuana does not, whether you consume it in the traditional fashion or shooting it up. Okay, thank you as always. Great to have you here. Thank you everybody for watching throughout the week. We'll see you on Monday. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.